stands ready to evaluate where we are as we move forward and advise the governor-elect.
Former Governor Sean Parnell has been selected to advise Governor-elect Mike Dunleavy on the proposed gas line. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, November 9th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a new state law aims to make costs of medical care clear to patients.
We want to make sure you can afford that kind of treatment plan, that kind of health care costs, and it makes it easier for the patient to kind of be informed and be a part of that decision making.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. It's the time of year for people on Medicare to consider changes to their current Medicare prescription drug coverage. Plan designs can change and new plans may be available, so it's important for you to do an annual review of your plan. Open enrollment for Medicare Part D has started and will last until December the 7th. Learn more at medicare.alaska.gov or Alaska's Medicare Information Office at 800-478-6065. This message sponsored by Alaska Department of Health and Social Services and this station.
Governor-elect Mike Dunleavy's transition team will receive advice from former Republican Governor Sean Parnell on the proposed gas pipeline. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on the latest update on the transition plan.
Governor Bill Walker has made advancing a gas line one of his signature efforts, but it will be Walker's predecessor that Governor-elect Dunleavy's transition will be turning to as a special advisor on the project. Transition Chairman Tuckerman Babcock says Sean Parnell is well positioned for it. The announcement echoed at a press conference Friday in the hangar at Security Aviation in Anchorage.
No one knows more about the project than the former governor. Sean Parnell and his previous work on AKLNG moved the project along to a point it had really never reached before, and he stands ready to evaluate where we are as we move forward and advise the governor-elect.
Babcock also announced Dick Randolph will advise the transition on constitutional amendments. He led the effort to abolish Alaska's income tax in 1980. Dunleavy has supported guaranteeing permanent fund dividends in the Constitution, and he suggested the state should limit revenue for state government in the Constitution. He's pointed to Colorado as a potential inspiration for an amendment. Colorado requires voter approval for any tax increases, and Dunleavy wants to lower the spending limit in the state constitution. Dunleavy announced the Transition Policy Council will have two co-chairmen. They are John Moeller, a Juneau commercial fisherman who served as senior rural affairs advisor to Parnell, and Brett Huber, who managed Dunleavy's campaign and will be a senior policy advisor in the administration. Moeller says the transition will examine the role of the Tribal Advisory Council formed by Walker. Moeller notes that Dunleavy has proposed a rural sub-cabinet that could serve a similar objective. Huber says Alaskans can provide their ideas about how to implement Dunleavy's agenda.
We're already hearing comments from Alaskans on how best to help put this plan in place.
Alaskans can submit their ideas through the transition website, GovernorMikeDunleavy.com. Dunleavy says much work needs to be done in the next 3.5 weeks.
We have a very short window, very short time frame to do this.
Dunleavy will be sworn in on December 3rd. In Anchorage, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The University of Alaska system continues to receive increasing numbers of reports of sexual offenses, ranging from sexual assault to harassment, discrimination, and other misconduct. UA Title IX officer Mary Gower told Regents that the number of reports is up 20% over last year at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She says reports doubled at the University of Alaska Southeast and tripled at the University of Alaska Anchorage.
And then keeping in mind, we were already up 81% last year. So we have a very, very high volume of reports that are coming into Title IX.
Gower noted that there is a positive aspect to the continued increase in reports.
That people are increasingly more comfortable with coming forward, and they're confident when they do come forward that we will take the appropriate action to assist them and provide them resources.
Gower framed the increasing number of sex offenses reported to the university relative to what's happening throughout the state.
The extreme high level of sexual assault, and even more traumatically, sexual assault of children in our state. And so we do find that with those reports, I would say that there is a mixture of ones that were high school and earlier that the alleged incident occurred.
Gower says many of the incidents are reported by third parties, including friends of victims. UAF had the highest number of reports, including last year when a total of 218 were received. Noting that many occurred in past years in other places, UAF Chancellor Dan White told Regents that investigation resulted in 15 actual Title IX violation cases. UA is increasing Title IX staffing statewide to address the caseload. Gower pointed to the hiring of 4 new investigators and another 4 the university is in the process of bringing on. Well, beginning next year, a new law will require all healthcare providers in Alaska to be more transparent about their prices. Some hope it will give consumers the tools to shop around, boosting competition and subsequently lowering prices. While it may help prevent sticker shock, experts say the move most likely won't result in cheaper medical procedures. KBBI's Renee Gross has more.
Devon Smith is the Clinical Operations Business Director for SVT Health and Wellness in the Homer area. He says if healthcare prices catch patients off guard and they are unable to pay, it can impede their treatment.
It actually compiles onto those social determinants that hindered them from actually getting better.
That's part of the reason why the clinic discusses prices and payment options with clients.
We want to make sure you can afford that kind of treatment plan, that kind of healthcare costs, and it makes it easier for the patient to kind of be informed and be a part of that decision making.
A new law will soon require SVT to go one step further. It will require all healthcare providers to post prices for the top healthcare services they provide, among other requirements. Patients will still pay different prices depending on their insurance and other factors. Andrea Dukas is a senior program officer with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and much like Smith, she says the primary reason to provide patients with more price transparency is to prevent sticker shock and help patients factor in the cost of procedures while creating a treatment plan. But she says it also gives them more tools to shop around.
When we are able to compare prices, or when we're able to see prices, we save money.
But she says comparing prices only goes so far.
So if you have the choice between going to get an x-ray that costs $300 or getting an x-ray that costs $250, if the price of that x-ray really appropriately should only be $20, you know, giving you the option and helping you shop, it's not going to help bring the cost of x-rays down to $20.
Historically, there have not been many incentives for patients to shop around either, as insurance coverage has typically picked up the bulk of healthcare costs. Patients have also relied heavily on their doctors to refer them to other providers.
Patients have not really gravitated towards this type of information in any kind of meaningful way.
Dennis Scanlon is a professor of health policy and administration and the director of the Center for Healthcare and Policy Research at Penn State. Scanlon explains that laws requiring transparent healthcare prices in other states and cities, including Anchorage, have not exactly spurred competition.
So if your goal is to create healthcare transparency to either get people to go to the low-cost providers or to have the high-cost providers lower their prices, there are some selective examples of that happening, but it's not widespread yet.
But he says markets with high healthcare costs, such as Alaska, and changes in the healthcare market in general, have the potential to change that.
As there have been more of a push to insurance plan designs with higher deductibles, which require more first dollar out-of-pocket expenses by patients. And so I think that's, for lack of a better term, woken some patients up to, maybe awaken some patients to understand that, you know, boy, this is costly and it might be worth shopping around a little bit.
Proponents of the new requirements will have to wait and see if Alaskans are more prone to shop around when the healthcare transparency law goes into effect on January 1st. However, shopping around only works if you have a choice in healthcare in the first place, and for many rural and roadless Alaskan communities, that's just not a reality. Reporting in Homer, I'm Renee Gross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a group of Sitkins on a quest for the next great board game.
Lots of people grew up playing board games that were frankly a bit bad. Monopoly is only fun if you're winning, which is means that 75% of the people playing are not having a good time.
That is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating more than 40 years of Alaska operations.
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska reminds residents that open enrollment for individual and family health plans is now through December 15th. Many Alaskans qualify for a premium tax credit, which could lower the cost of health care coverage. Enroll at primera.com. This message sponsored by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska.
Today, the U.S. District Court in Anchorage heard arguments in a case that could determine whether millions of acres of Arctic waters should be closed to oil development. Elizabeth Harbaugh of Alaska's Energy Desk was in the courtroom today and is here to talk about what she heard. Harbaugh, how's it going?
Great. How are you?
Doing well. Well, give us a little background here. What were the events leading up to this case?
So just before he left office, President Obama took all of the Chukchi Sea and most of the Beaufort Sea off the table for offshore oil leasing, causing a great amount of concern from Alaska political leaders. And then a few months later, Donald Trump took the White House. And a few months after that, he reversed Obama's order and said, go ahead and have oil leases in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas. And environmental groups filed a challenge to that, and that led us to the court case that happened today.
Okay, so you were in court. What were some of the arguments that you heard today?
So it was interesting. It hinged on a single phrase in the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act put in place by Congress. And the phrase was, the President of the United States may from time to time withdraw from disposition any of the unleased lands of the Outer Continental Shelf. And that is what President Obama used to take all of that offshore area off the table in the Arctic from oil leasing. Now, environmental groups argue no takebacks on that. That line only goes one direction, and President Trump exceeded his authority as president. The Trump administration obviously disagrees. They think that is a very broad reading of that line. One line from the Department of Justice attorney today was, Congress does not hide elephants in mouse holes. They argued that, you know, if environmental groups were right, the president would have the ability to basically take all of federal offshore ocean off the table for oil development. And environmental groups said, yeah, perhaps. That's what the line says. And then Congress could make the president go back. But that's Congress that should have the ability to do that, not the president.
So what's next? And what could the outcome of this case actually mean for Alaska?
So I talked to an attorney in the case, and he did not expect an outcome in this for months. And even then, the case is probably likely to be appealed to a higher court. That said, this could have a relatively near-term impact. The Trump administration has already proposed holding an oil lease sale in the Beaufort Sea by late next year and a Chukchi Sea lease sale the year after that. So if environmental groups are successful, that would impact those lease sales.
That was Elizabeth Harbaugh with Alaska's Energy Desk. Thanks for being here, Elizabeth.
Yeah, thanks so much.
After 2 days of contract negotiations, the Anchorage School District and the Anchorage Education Association, that's the district's teachers' union, have agreed to a third round of mediation. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more on the contract dispute.
Negotiations with the mediator went late into the night on Wednesday, ending at about 1:30 in the morning. But the district and the teachers' union still haven't reached an agreement. It was expected that if the mediation failed, the negotiations would move to arbitration. However, ASD Chief of Human Resources Todd Hess says that both mediation sessions brought the two sides closer to a resolution.
Then at the end of that, after everybody has a chance to get a couple hours sleep, because it was a long day yesterday, people say, you know what, we made good progress. We're hopeful. We think we can reach a positive resolution. And the mediator agrees again to come back up. So I think that's very positive.
Anchorage Education Association President Tom Claymire echoed that sentiment. He says the two main points of contention have been over salary increases and curriculum changes.
And frankly, it's not so much the the actual curriculum that, although there are some people that aren't exactly happy with that, but it's more the implementation.
Claymire says the new curriculum was implemented poorly and described the lesson plans as, quote, scripted. The district says it introduced the new curriculum to help improve low student performance on standardized tests. During school board public testimony for the last couple months, many teachers testified that the curriculum changes were negatively affecting their teaching. They also specifically accused both Hess and Superintendent Dina Bishop of minimizing teachers' complaints. Hess was quoted in several testimonies describing the situation as a manufactured crisis in a district general leadership meeting. When questioned about that comment, Hess said the remark was taken out of context. In a video of that leadership meeting obtained by Alaska Public Media, Hess explicitly states, quote, "We have a manufactured crisis," end quote. He goes on to list ways that he believed the union was, quote, "rallying the troops." Here's Hess at the meeting referring to the union.
They identify issues. Some are correct. Many are not. Talking about principal intimidation. I believe that's a manipulation. Talking about certain curricular issues. I believe those are exaggerations.
Another part of the contract disputes involves salaries. Right now, the union has brought their proposal down to just under 10% increase to annual salaries over 3 years. The district's counteroffer is just over 2% over 3 years. The district says that the raises that the union is asking for would cost millions, resulting in layoffs and increases to class sizes, both of which tend to negatively affect school performance. AEA President Claymire says a point of contention is that a section of the Anchorage School District budget that was set aside for pending negotiations last year was not included on this year's budget. Hess says that money wasn't specifically designed to be used only for salary negotiations.
There was a misunderstanding that that section was specific to labor negotiations. That wasn't accurate. We negotiate for fuel. We negotiate for power. We do all of those different things along with labor.
AEA President Claymire says that aside from the various issues being negotiated for the contracts, another strain on the teachers has been time.
I think a lot of our members are frustrated because the process has taken so long as what they view is doing the right thing. Why is it so hard to do the right thing?
Both Claymire and Hess said their respective agencies hope that the negotiations can be resolved before the worst-case scenario, which would most likely be a strike. The date for the third wave of mediation has not yet been set. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com.
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska wants to remind residents that open enrollment for individual and family health plans is now through December 15th. Many Alaskans qualify for a tax credit on their premiums to help lower the cost of coverage, and according to a study by KF Foundation, average tax credits for Alaskans who qualified in 2017 were over $700 a month. Learn more and estimate your tax credit at primera.com. This message sponsored by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, all aboard. The tourism season has come to a close, and that means that things in Southeast Alaska are slowing down. Some spend their winters vacationing on tropical islands, trying to miss as much of the rain and cold as they can. But one group of Sitkins decided to take a vacation to an equally cold and equally rainy place, Vancouver, BC, for a board game convention. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
Inside a gargantuan convention hall, in the middle of hundreds of tables covered in black tablecloths, sit groups of four to five conferring amongst themselves. At one of those tables, a handful of Sitkins are in their own world, wandering through some imaginary woods, trying to escape from a vicious axe murderer.
So there's trees to my south, no trees to my east, no trees to my west, there's trees to my north.
They're playing Nyctophobia, a board game where players never actually see the board. They wear plastic blackout sunglasses, as one player who can see guides their hands. They feel each piece on the board, stumbling blindly through the forest, looking for rocks, stopping at trees, and desperately searching for the car so they can escape.
The track star's really dumb, you guys. He keeps running headlong into trees.
Dude, would you not panic in this situation?
Okay. They've traveled to Shucks, a convention for tabletop gamers to gather and try some new board games on the market. In its second year, Shucks is put on by Shut Up and Sit Down, a team of people who review board games professionally on YouTube, and they produce some of the most popular podcasts and videos in the tabletop gaming community. Sitkin Seton Bryan relies on their reviews to decide what games to add to his growing library.
I've been playing board games religiously since high school. Started with some really basic stuff, but I have around 200 games now in my collection.
While Brian has been into it for a while, many more people are dipping their toes in the tabletop world. Board games have seen a massive resurgence over the past 10 years. Shucks co-founder Matt Lees has a theory about why the market is booming.
I think personally it's that people are starting to self-moderate a little bit. Our lives are becoming increasingly digital and people are looking for ways to try and kind of step away from that. Still spend time with people, still spend time thinking about complex, interesting puzzles and stuff, but just away from screens.
With a growing demand, the market is flooded with new games that appeal to every level of gamer. In the Shucks Expo Hall are games like Fog of Love, a two-person role player that simulates a relationship in a romantic comedy, to a game called Chai, where you actually play a tea merchant trying to brew the perfect blend of tea.
And it's really exciting for us because we think that lots of people grew up playing board games that were, frankly, a bit bad. Monopoly is only fun if you're winning, which means that 75% of the people playing are not having a good time.
And it's not just about loading up on new cardboard. For people from a small town like Sitka, it's nice to be able to come to a place where there is literally a convention hall half Sitka size, filled with 2,000 people in the building that share their passion for tabletop gaming. For Brian, it's a welcome opportunity.
Just being able to run into people that saw what game you were playing and say, it's like, oh, I love this game, or wow, what's this? Or do that yourself, just like walk around, see something you've never played before, and find out. It's amazing.
Talking with others at Shucks, I was surprised to discover the board game world has roots in Southeast Alaska. In Juneau, Jack Eddy runs a board game review site of his own, the Cardboard Herald. He produces podcasts and videos, and he'll likely have a table at Juneau's own growing board game convention in January, PlatypusCon, which is in its fifth year. He let me in on a little secret about Sitka's own celebrities.
You may be interested to know is that two of the original Magic the Gathering artists and two of the most celebrated original Magic the Gathering artists are actually from Sitka, Alaska and grew up there.
And back at Shucks, Matt Lees has an idea of why Southeast Alaska may have a strong tabletop gaming culture.
It's really unsurprising to me to hear that a group I've come all the way from a place where in the winter things are boring and dark. And I think lots of people who end up getting into board games do so for reasons like that. Maybe they're having a difficult time in their life. Maybe they're having issues with mobility. Maybe they're living somewhere where you can't go out and have a good time outside, so you need to be inventive. But I think that what I find interesting is people gravitate to board games for a variety of different reasons. But when they find them, they really stay and they really grab onto people. And I just think more people should give it a go because it's brilliant.
And Brian and his friends did give it a go. They left Vancouver with suitcases full of board games, back to Sitka stocked up on cardboard and prepared for the winter. For AK, I'm Catherine Rose.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Claire Baldwin, the USUAA Vice President at the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Never even saw myself being a part of. I was kind of shy, a little nervous, and didn't really know what I wanted to do in my position. So I joined last year as a senator. And then when we had a little bit of shuffling around with leadership positions, I was asked to move up to be the vice president. Yeah, some of it's very boring work, but I really enjoy the people. So even though some of the things we're doing are very minute and sometimes it feels like we are making just very small differences, being with the people and enjoying the atmosphere and the environment here is what really keeps bringing me back. So when people ask if I am born and raised in Alaska, I feel bad saying yes, because it's not true, but to me, Alaska's all I remember. So to me, I was basically born in Alaska. I was born in Oklahoma City. My dad was in the military, and when it came time for him to switch locations, Alaska popped up on the list, and him and my mom were like, okay, let's take a chance on Alaska. So we drove up here on the Alcan, me and my brother, and they moved here. We lived on base in Chugiak as well, and they loved it here, so I've been here ever since. I always feel very home in Alaska. They're the type of people that when you're in a ditch and it's 7 o'clock at night, they pull up, no questions asked. They pull you out of the ditch. It's actually happened to me, random stranger. They help you out even when they don't even know your name, don't ask anything in return. I decided to stay in Alaska mainly for the cost of college. I do plan on going to graduate school, and that was kind of on my mind. I think I'll come back to Alaska. I didn't always love Alaska, but the longer I've stayed here, I've learned to love it even more. I'm thinking of, after I graduate, getting either going in the direction of data analysis or public policy. I imagine myself sometime hopefully working in government, not being the politician myself, but being the person behind the politician, the one who really makes all the decisions.
Claire Baldwin lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Catherine Rose and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at AK Public News. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Renee Gross in Homer. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our producer. And I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by BP, investing in Alaska by hosting local interns and donating to University of Alaska programs like the UAA Summer Engineering Academy. More at bp.com/Alaska. First National Bank Alaska, offering online and mobile tools to help Alaskans succeed. Promises kept, trust earned since 1922. FNBAAlaska.com. And by Raven Alaska. Raven serves Alaskans in over 115 communities across the state, from Valdez, Utqiagvik, and more. Information at flyraven.com.
1 out of 3 U.S. adults has pre-diabetes, but 90% of them don't even know they have it. The good news is you can prevent type 2 diabetes by acting early. Learn your risk for pre-diabetes by taking a short quiz at diabetes.alaska.gov. If you're at risk, you can enroll in a free online program called Turnaround Health. The program will help you eat better, be active, and lose weight. Learn more at diabetes.alaska.gov. This message sponsored in part by the Department of Health and Social Services.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.